Tell me what other authors you have translated. Besides the Gaudiya.
Julio Cortázar is the first. Hopscotch. Is the title in English. It's the game, you know.
The game, yeah. Okay.
And we got him like this, of course. Miguel Ángel Asturias. In Brazil, Jorge Amado. I came to Jorge a little bit late. Later on, before that, I had done the first Brazilian. I did this. My second book was Clarice Inspector.
You have translated Clarice Inspector?
Yes, Masami School.
Masami School.
I knew Clarice.
You knew her?
Came back once more.
I have interviewed Ellen Fixus, that has worked in a lot on on her works. You know her?
No.
In France, she's the one that
Nelly de Pignon is an old one of my oldest friends from Brazil. In fact, I met her the first trip I ever made to Brazil. Nelly de Eduardo Portela.
Yeah.
When they were just, we were all just a young bunch. And now everyone's gone.
Portela is the director of the Biblioteca Nacional.
He was minister of culture.
He's a good friend to me.
Baiano Burro Nasce Morto.
Baiano Burro Nasce Morto. He is Baiano?
Baiano.
I didn't know that. Well,
from Feira de Santana.
So you came to Jorge Amado afterwards?
Afterwards, yeah. I did in between, and I had Olma Liz of Alovara, which I liked. After doing Cortázar, Liz was very close.
How come you translate from the two languages?
I've studied them both.
You studied them both, but do you also have an experience of hearing these languages? Or only reading them?
No, I spent 3 years in Brazil. I wrote my dissertation on Brazilian
literature,
on black in Brazilian novel. Portela published it in Central Brazil. South America, traveled many places. Portugal, but never been to Spain.
Yeah, because Portuguese from Portugal is very different from the Portuguese.
I can understand.
We too. We have difficulties.
I had a Brazilian friend who said when he went to Lisbon, he spoke English.
Yeah.
Because they'd answer him in English.
No, and besides that, they get very mad at us because they think we don't speak, we spoil the language.
And it's better.
Well, so you have translated all these, you have translated Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Jorge Amado. I would like to know from you, and you have translated other authors from these two cultures, what is there in common to these two writers that justify them being called Latin American? You know, what is common in their literature? Is there anything you would point out?
Those two, I don't know. The legends, I guess, more the folklore that comes out. Latin America, I don't know whether
it's a good conceit.
I think it's artificial. It's artificial.
You think it's artificial?
Yeah, if they have to speak two Romance languages.
I wanted to hear that from you.
The first Brazilian, I think the coincidence, I find it having seen both sides, that Brazil is just as different from Spanish America as it is from the outposts in the United States. Three different
cultures.
I said they look the same because of the climate, because of the ethnicity, and because of the architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So you fly over in a plane, and you can't tell when you go from Brazil to Argentina when you land.
That's completely different.
The history is so different.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Portugal is not Spain.
Yeah.
But way back in the beginning, they went their separate ways.
Could you try to tell the specificity of these two cultures through your work in literature? Could you say something more about this?
Language. Hmm? I think that Brazilian, I call it Brazilian, Portuguese, is much more inventive than Spanish.
Even in literature?
Oh, yeah.
Explain that to me.
I think it's easier to write in some ways in Portuguese than in Spanish, because the language, I find it more like English. It's open.
The Portuguese language.
You can do things with it, and it's easier. Spanish is very tight, which I think the greatness in Spanish is the other way around.
Yes?
That is, a great writer in Portuguese has got to control that wild language.
Yeah.
A great writer in Spanish has got to break it out. And that's entirely different, I think. The Jorge Amado sails right along because the language carries him.
Mm-hmm.
García Márquez really has to push it.
Mm-hmm.
Break out.
But why do you think that Spanish literature had more entrance in the world and was more successful than Brazilian literature?
Geography.
Geography?
It's closer.
You mean closer to the
United States? As Porfirio Diaz, the old dictator, said of Mexico, Pobre Mexico, tan lejos de Dios y tan cerca de los Estados Unidos. No, I think that the American public, and therefore I think maybe the European, because the Europeans, I think, see Latin America through North American eyes much more. And of course the Americans are closer to Mexico, Cuba. It's Spanish, and immigration.
Immigration.
That is, the South Americans who come here are
come more.
Spanish. Mm-hmm. Although in Manhattan now, you hear a little bit of the
Portuguese. Yeah, all the time. You hear Portuguese now. So
Mark and I used to use it as a secret language on the subway, but we don't dare anymore.
You don't do anymore. Hamako, so you think it's not because of the relationship to language, it's because...
And culture.
It's not, because you were saying that Portuguese and Spaniards have different relationships to language. You wouldn't explain the bigger success of Spaniards than Portuguese through this.
No. Because the best writer of them all was Brazilian.
You mean
Machado de Assis. And he was unknown. Nobody knew of him while they were reading mediocre Spanish writers in the 19th century. And they only discovered Machado now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just contact.
That's important for literature.
But okay. I think there's this misconception of Latin America.
It comes from France, I think, that conceit. I don't know if it comes. I think French have...
And the idea of Latin. Now they use the word Latino.
Latino.
Yeah.
I always present myself as a Latin.
And Latin.
We have to do with Tupi, not with Latin.
Yeah, Tupi or not Tupi.
Yeah.
I was Mario Andrade from that.
Well, but anyhow, these authors like Gabriel García Márquez and Jorge Amado, they were very well accepted and loved in the whole world.
Yeah.
What is there in their literature that could explain this? Why did they fascinate the world?
I guess I have to give you a cliche. They're good writers. They write good books, and mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to read. Both of them. Beyond that, you have the Jorge has he has his magic realism. I think it's that book, *The Sumisión del Santo*, where he mingles the religion. He makes fantasy real, which is magic realism. So when the statue comes to life,
mm-hmm.
and also the fact that you can read into it that the when it was a Catholic saint, it was a statue. But when she came to life, She was an Orisha. That was the living saint was the African one. And that the Catholic saint was the dead one, the wooden thing. So you can see things like that. But beyond it is he tells
a magical,
he tells a good story.
Mm-hmm. He's a good narrator.
Yeah. And Garcia Marquez also. People read things into Garcia Marquez. Interpretation, this and that.
They put themselves in.
And Garcia Marquez says, "That's right, that's right." Never thought of it when he wrote the story. Mm-hmm. James Joyce did the same thing. People would tell Joyce, "Oh, why this? That's Joyce. That's right."
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great art.
It's still there, though.
Ambiguous.
If somebody else sees it, it is there. Whether you thought of it or not, you put it there.
Well, what are the main problems you found in translating from Spanish and from Portuguese into English? Please specify more. What is it that could not be transposed from one culture to the other, and what sort of constructions are not possible in English?
Mm. The Portuguese, I think, was more difficult because of their freedom. It's a freer language. In some ways, it does things English has no equivalent. Portuguese plays with itself.
But that could be a reason why Brazilian literature is less known in the world.
I don't think so. It was Guimarães Rosa, of course. I still find untranslatable to a large degree, at least Garcia Cangareira. But on the other hand, the writer like Alice can be translated.
He's been translated,
but it's a bad translation. They wonder where somebody got a Guggenheim Award to do a new one, but he hasn't been. George Amado's agent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tom's supposed to be doing it, but I haven't.
I think he's
too busy. But no, some of the stories have been translated too.
Mm-hmm. But so let's come back. So what is it that is more difficult to transpose? The difficulties you have found in this work
with. But again, when I'm speaking the two languages, in Portuguese you've got to sort of rein it in, back and forth, and find the English equivalent. Spanish, I think, is easier because you can follow the Spanish to English a little closer than Portuguese. But you've got to watch out that it doesn't get too flat. You got to use the English, you got to. I don't know. I think English is much more expressive than Spanish. Garcia Marquez made the beautiful comment on that. But he said he liked the English version of 100 years of society rather than his own.
I'm
going
to tell you why I'm here. Because I went to a bookstore and I opened your translation and I read the first sentence of the Amos de Toledo. And it was just like when I read it in Portuguese 30 years ago. I was so impressed. I said, I have to.
Well, Gabo said he liked the English better than the Spanish. But I think it wasn't a compliment to me, really. It was a compliment to the English language.
What? Spanish.
Although you read the Cervantes, and he's always better than his translations.
Well, So, besides the language problems, were there problems, cultural problems that...
Vocabulary, of course.
Vocabulary.
You have to watch out. There's a difference in Spanish and Portuguese. Brazil has now...
Non-translatable.
Modern Brazilian is pretty universal. And it's a national language, more or less. Spanish, you have all these different really national languages. The Argentine, is different from Puerto Rican. He says he's going to catch a bus and they arrest him as a child molester. Very fulfilling.
So the only problem is because sometimes there are things that cannot be said in other languages.
I had trouble with Yoji, for example, with the Four Mountains. When he was, every time he mentioned a male member, he used a different word. And I ran out of words in English.
Because you're in a Puritan society.
Because English doesn't have that. If I studied, maybe in the Augustan archaic, go to Chaucer or something.
Shakespeare,
I could have done it. But out of my own head, which was pretty rich, I had to stop and repeat. And he never repeated those different words. Things like that. And then there are colorful expressions. A popular expression in a language very rarely carries over into the other because it's based on that language.
Mm. So writers that can be translated are writers that do not write much in the popular language.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons perhaps
even a writer who invents, like Julio Cortázar, can be done in English because you invent.
You can invent.
But if it comes from the language itself, you don't have that freedom to invent. Yeah. Curses, the worst thing to tell me about curses.
Uh-huh.
They're never the same. Because of the whole social concept.
Curses is what? I know.
Calling somebody a name.
Mm.
In English, for example, very common phrase is "you bastard." In most Latin countries, it means nothing. People don't go calling people bastard in Spanish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the other hand, in Spanish, the word cabrón is one of the worst.
Cabrón means what exactly?
Caco. A man whose wife is cheating on him.
Ah, cornudo.
Cornudo.
Yeah.
And in English, call somebody a cuckoo, he doesn't know what it means.
Okay.
And yet that's one of the worst, that's fighting.
Yeah, because it's honor that is in question.
Spanish. Bastard means nothing to me. Hijo de puta, son of a bitch.
That's the same in every language.
But the difference of puta and bitch, two different, son of a whore in English, no one ever says that.
What is the difference between puta and bitch?
Bitch is a female dog.
Ah, I thought it was a whore.
No.
Well, that means that there are things that cannot be transposed because they don't have the cultural equivalent.
Mm-hmm. Like prayers, too. But people could and they prayed with them.
You have to reinvent that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's speak about the good. What should a good translation achieve? That's my next question.
It should give the meaning, of course.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. It's obvious. Then it also should give the spirit. Sometimes a word, there are two different words with the same meaning, but with a little different spirit. And third, it should sound good. In the new language. Sounds natural and sometimes even poetic. Those three. And they're hard to get together. Sometimes you have to sacrifice one and the other. García Márquez, I found out, was not that bad because he writes so well in Spanish that he points to the translation. He says, okay, picking a word. That he makes you see exactly what that was going to mean. Other writers you have to start with,
It means that the more strict writing is, the more done it is, the easier it is to translate.
But I think I don't think it's anything studied. It's
natural.
It's instinctive. It's artistic. But he's not. He's not a scholar trying to find the word. He changes it, but it's like a painter who puts the color on and he finds it. Ask him why.
He doesn't know. Yeah. It's a good word to have to tell why.
I saw a beautiful comparison once between someone talking about the artist and the critic. And he said the artist is to the critic like a bird is to the ornithologist.
Exactly. Thank you for having said that. And I do think that
ornithologists can't fly.
They can't fly. And I think critics cannot truly impose works of art. The work does not impose itself. The critic cannot do it.
No.
Well, would you like to say something about the translation of poetry? Have you ever tried that?
I've done a little poetry. In fact, the only poetry I have published is Vinicius.
Mm.
I did some poems of his, including the Ipanema, which I thought needed his lyrics a little bit too far.
From that.
So, and I did the one I liked with his Gigi Clear song.
Do people read it here?
This is a small little poetry book, and some has a small audience, but it's a common.
Poetry always has small audience.
I have a record I like to use. This is Vinicius recites the Gigi Clear song.
Mm.
And it has the chorus behind it, and it keeps it called. But like this album,
beautiful. I've heard that.
The music and Odetti Lara was.
Yeah, I've heard that. In your opinion, what are the main translation achievements that in this century? Because if we open it a little bit to the.
I think one. The translation has got better in general.
All right. Before, I would like you to speak about books that are good translation.
Books.
Good achievements.
That's on lunch.
Yeah, certainly. That's why I'm here.
I think also the ones that have got very good, some of the classics have lately, the Iliad, the Odyssey have had.
They have had
new translations which are very good.
What about Dante?
And Dante, yes. What's his name? Alan Mandelbaum has a new Dante. And he also has an interesting thing on translation, is that when he was working on Dante, he had to refer a lot to Virgil, so that he got dissatisfied with the Virgil translation.
And he
put his Dante aside for a while, and he translated the Aeneid, which is probably the best one we have.
Who is the translator?
Mandelbaum.
Are you Alan. Right? M-A-N-D-E-L.
M-A-N-D-E-L-Baum.
B-A-U-M. Alan.
Alan. And then he went back and he finished his Dante.
Mm-hmm.
So he has his Dante and he has his Virgil.
What about the Quixote? It has been done.
It hasn't been done. It's been done this century, not recently. I sometimes think it would be fun to do it, but when I look at the side.
Is it good?
Oh, there's some good ones, yeah. I taught it, and in fact, I teach it in the course now. And there's some good translations. I'm satisfied when I teach it in English that I have.
Yeah.
Have a good text to use. There's some other classics.
These achievements you have mentioned are due principally to what? The fact that they are good.
I think that because in this century, or in this second half, people are paying more attention to translation.
Yeah.
And so they're getting Russian. A lot of new, good Russian translations coming in. Dostoevsky, the classic. Dostoevsky,
What aspect of translation are people now paying more attention?
Well, what we were talking about, the combination
of
accuracy plus
great
artistic quality.
Yeah.
And I think it's some poetry. This is different poetry.
Are there good schools of translation here? We have your school.
I haven't taught in a while. I don't know if you can teach translation. But I said that's what proves that translation is an art and not a craft.
Yeah.
You can teach a craft, but you can't teach in heart. You can guide.
You can guide, yes.
You can tell some, as a kid, you can tell
like
somebody what you didn't do right, but you can't tell them how to do right.
Yes.
Try it again, that's the best you can do.
Anyway, there are some departments of translation.
Oh yeah, all over, yeah.
In the United States.
Yeah. I've taught courses, some of my students have gone on to publish.
You teach here?
Yes.
And you teach translation?
I haven't taught translation for quite a while.
You teach literature?
Literature. Trying to teach Portuguese, but we don't have any students to teach Portuguese. And then we lost them. There was some political business they lost in the banking and peace. The irony is that Queens and the colleges is named for a Portuguese princess. The wife of Charles II of England. Queens County, named for her. They're putting a statue up on the silver. But we don't teach Portuguese. It's a shame. The Duke was here 2 years ago.
Who?
The Duke of Bragança.
Duque de Bragança.
Don Duarte.
Yeah. He lives in New Zealand, past year, I think.
No, he lives in Lisbon.
He lives in Sintra.
I think I met him beginning. I think the one in Brazil is the Brazilian president.
Yeah.
The emperor.
Yes.
Dom Pedro.
He lives in Paraty. Well, the conditions in which translators have worked have been difficult. What can we expect from the coming years?
If it goes on the way it is, there's no. I think it'll be. It's getting better. I don't think it's getting worse. The only problem is commercial. That speaking for the United States. Is publishing has become junk publishing, and a reluctance, and also very commercial, so a reluctance to publish a translation, first because it doesn't sell as a foreign book, and second because it costs extra. You've got to pay for the translation as well as the book. Garcia Marquez is no problem. He's well known, his books sell. Bring in a new good writer from Brazil or Spanish America, and the only way he or she will get published here is if they made a smashing success in France or England. Some publishing houses now belong to these huge conglomerates. It says Alfred Knopf. But Alfred Knopf has been dead for 20 years. And he publishes. Knopf has published. Knopf is the one who started the Brazilian publishing here. He went to Brazil, he liked it, he published Clarice, he published Jorge Amado, Guimarães.
One last question.
Take your time. I have until 2 o'clock.
In the second half of the century, literature has lost much of the space it has. What will be its space in the coming years, in your opinion?
I can be very negative.
Don't you think that if writers
they watch.
Change the way they write, perhaps people will read that we have to invent a new way of writing? They read Paulo Coelho, for example.
Not as much as they used to. They don't think of them. They have a new one.
They read in the screen.
They look at pictures. And this is the old, even before television and radio, the 19th century Christmas.
Perhaps we don't have to expect this attitude anymore.
We don't have the books anymore.
Even you don't have the book.
You don't have Flaubert, Dickens, and I think, but it's a minority. Reading is now a minority. It was to a degree, but it wasn't like you said magazine, popular magazines used to have the full story. not just New Yorker, but some the lower level
But anyway, literature accomplishes something that no other art can accomplish. So it will perhaps it will have a smaller public.
It makes you think. But the people don't
always people wanting to think, some people wanting to think.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I haven't.
You're completely pessimist?
I just remember a beautiful line from a comedy movie where somebody asked the detective, he said, "What, Sergeant, what do you think about this?" He said, "I'm not paid to think. I work for City Hall."
Mm-hmm. No, it has to do with money. What we're speaking about is the consequence of money directing the world.
Possibly. I think it's broader than that. It's a whole change. Money may be at the bottom of it. But since the war, economic progress and technological progress and so forth, population is changing, that kind of thing, but people move around. And reading is...
So they don't know the language?
Reading is sedentary.
Sedentary.
And people, the person who is still living in his own hometown today is very rare. And too hard, people are hard. What more do you need? They have to. And they're going to... You know, I may be too pessimistic. On the other hand, I haven't seen in this country, in America, is one reason people are looking at it.
It doesn't have the same presence, in a way.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's strange for somebody coming from abroad, even from Paris, because, is that how money directs every minute of your life. You know, you sit in a bar and you want to write something, you can't. They will ask you what's the next consumption. You think you're going to... You feel it very much here. You even feel it in the way the street is organized. New York is done for going through. It's not done for looking and contemplating and...
Mm-hmm.
The whole relationship to time in America that is completely different from Europe.
And now the computer, of course, is...
Okay. Do you want to say something more?
I say that. I can always say something if you want.
I think that was nice.